Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. This is the podcast where I try and keep you caught up on what's going on in Ireland and indeed the world. Today's the news episode. Lots of news to get into. Been a lot of crazy stuff going on over the course of the last week with immigration and so-called protests about immigration. A lot of stuff going on with protests in the US in universities about what's going on in Gaza and lots more besides that. We're going to talk about Harvey Weinstein, going to talk about housing, we're going to talk about all kinds of things. But before we do, hello, how are you? Are you well? I hope you are. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to listen today. Hopefully you will find this to be useful. I am good. Since I last saw you, I went to the VIP Style Awards, which is always fun, but it's a lot of pressure, you know, and I was talking to a few people on Friday night about it, and I was thinking it was worth mentioning, I think, because it's a very glamorous night. It's very nice to be nominated. It's even better just to get to go. Like, all that I care about with these things is that I get to get dressed up and go to the party, because there's nothing I like more than getting dressed up and going to the party. It's my fave. And I've been loads of times to the VIP Style Awards. I've been lucky enough to be invited and nominated several times. And I was really looking forward to it on Friday. And then I was halfway through doing my makeup and I had a full panic attack. And I can't even explain why. I wasn't consciously feeling anxious ahead of it. I'm not someone who has like an anxiety disorder. I wouldn't put myself in that category. I think I'm relatively lucky in that regard. But I did. That's what happened. I had to stop. It took me a long time to calm down. In fact, I wasn't really calm even when I was arriving at the Style Awards. I wasn't just feeling 100%, and I can't really explain it. And I eventually, I recovered, mainly because I met PJ Kirby, who is a literal angel on earth. And he was sitting with me at my table. And once I met him, I kind of spilled it all out to him. And I said, look, I'm really having a hard time. And he was amazing and, you know, really supported me through it. I had to have a little cry and then I was able to kind of move on. But I just think it's important to acknowledge that, like, these nights are not without their stresses and their pressures. And in speaking to some other women in particular on Friday night, I realized that it's something that a lot of us experience when it comes to these big nights where there's so much pressure on what you look like, on what you're wearing, on how your hair is, on what your makeup is. And, you know, you can feel, you know, the photographs, there's endless photographs, so many photographs, you know, people, so much commentary online. It's kind of crazy when you consider that none of it really matters. And that's no disrespect. Like, I love going and I love being part of it and it's really fun. But, like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, whether or not your outfit works out for an awards show or any party or whatever is not that important. And yet we kind of live in a culture which has placed so much emphasis. And I'm part of it. Like, you know, I write about beauty. I write about, or I do fashion content on my Instagram and stuff. But I really felt like on Friday, have I lost the run of myself? Like, is this this is not normal or appropriate. I haven't finished processing it yet, but I think a bit of reality is always important in the context of these things, which look incredibly glamorous and are incredibly glamorous. But there's always another side to that story, let me tell you. But having said that, I had an absolutely amazing night in the end. I very much hope I get to go again next year. I think I need to approach it with a little more levity next year, because for some reason I got myself whipped up into an absolute frenzy. Other than that, it has been a nice weekend. I did the absolute dog on Friday night in the end and stayed up very, very late, and I still don't feel 100%. So I'm really feeling all of my 41 years. I think I just can't go as hard as I used to. It's tragic. Anywho, let's get into the podcast. Thank you all so much. By the way, important announcement, because I told you previously that even though the May 9th Laughter Lounge show was sold out, that we were working on a new date, and we have a new date, my friends. That date is Wednesday, the 29th of May. So those tickets are on sale now. I'll put the link in the show notes so that you can get involved. I heard from a good few people about the May 9th date who were like, I bought a ticket, but my friends were going to buy tickets, so they just didn't get around to it. And then now I have a ticket and they don't, and blah, blah, blah. Don't do that. If you're going to get your gang together, get them together and just get them now, and then you won't have to stress about it. It's going to be a really fun night. I'm really excited about what I have booked already. And it's going to be a different show to the May 9th show. So I think it's going to be really, really fun. Okay, that's all my admin. Thank you so much for being here. If you want more, don't forget, you can always join the Patreon, patreon.com/ catch up with Louise McSherry. But now let's get into the news. Good morning, Carl Kinsella. Once again, we are together to talk about the news. I actually found it really hard to narrow down the stories this week. There's a lot of crazy shit going on in the world and in Ireland specifically.
Yeah, and last week was a meaty week as well. So clearly we're in the depths of some serious news right now.
We sure are. Okay, well, let's start in Gaza, because I suppose almost the bigger story than what's actually happening in Gaza at the moment, even though obviously that's still very important, is what's happening around the world at protests, and particularly in American universities.
Yeah, well, the situation in American universities, like we saw last week, kind of began in Columbia, which is in New York. But we've since seen solidarity protests all across the country, Harvard, Yale, and this was happening even last week, but it has only intensified. And some of the footage we've seen from different universities is crazy. Like, I saw the arrest of a philosophy professor at one of the universities. You know, she was being asked, someone was filming and they were saying, what can we do to help you? And she was like, let the philosophy department know that I've been arrested, you know. And it is just... it really is. It's very frightening. And it's the kind of thing. There was one tweet. This is from like an unofficial account. It's called Mossad Communications. And that's a reference to the Israeli sort of spy branch Mossad. Mm. And it's not an official account, but it raised a very kind of frightening specter that they made a mention that everyone who attends these protests now, they can have their faces will be recognized. This facial recognition will be used to sort of monitor who's at these protests. And that is a very scary thought, because as we've seen in the last 7 months, Israel is such a powerful lobby in the United States. Mm. It can affect people's employment. It can certainly affect, of course, now their criminal records. And that's sort of, it's just, and of course, we haven't seen anything like that in Ireland, but it is just, it's a terrifying trend.
Yeah, it's really hard to get your head around. Like, I have a friend who lives in Berlin, and she's looking for somewhere to live at the moment, but she's also very active in pro-Palestinian protests in Berlin. And the atmosphere in Germany is crazy right now. Like, she repeatedly is being rejected when she applies to, go and see a room or whatever on the basis of her, you know, being active in pro-Palestinian protests. I was just going to say, it's just sometimes hard to comprehend just how different the atmosphere is in other countries compared to how things are here.
Absolutely. Like, Germany kind of famously now in recent years is one of the most intensely pro-Israeli countries. And, you know, that obviously has a lot to do with guilt, and it has a lot to do with sort of almost the not the denial of their crimes during World War II, but it's sort of like they refuse to hear any other side of the argument because they have just... it's sort of like almost a a mass delusion brought on by the guilt in terms of how they believe they need to support Israel and kind of everything they do. And yeah, you know, we saw recently there was the Congress Palestina that was to take place in Palestine. Richard Boyd Barrett was due to speak at it. Doctors were like, there was a doctor from the UK prevented from entering to speak at it. So, you know, yeah, you're seeing huge crackdowns in Germany as well. And yeah, you know, it is one of those things where Ireland, it's a very different attitude. And I think you can always expect a pro-Palestine rally in Ireland probably to carry off without too much controversy, because it is just such a widespread, there is just widespread solidarity.
So. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Feeling grateful, to be honest, not to have to worry about your life. Just for doing the right thing. I mean, for me, which is just so absolutely black and white, the right thing. I think that's almost one of the most troubling aspects of it as well, is that you're just literally saying just, hey, maybe stop killing innocent people and children. Like that's what's problematic, apparently. It's really hard to get your head around.
There was a protest broken up in Germany, I think it was in the last 7 days, where some of the speakers, they were, so some people were speaking through Hebrew and some people were speaking through Arabic, some people were speaking through Irish, and this was all in solidarity with Palestine. And this meeting was broken up on the basis that these foreign languages were being spoken. So not only have they prevented people speaking Arabic, but they also targeted people, you know, like Jewish people who were speaking in Hebrew in defense of Palestine. And, you know, strangely enough, people who were speaking in Irish. So to reach that level of crackdown really is, you know, it feels like authoritarianism 101.
So in terms of what's actually happening in Gaza, the main discussion at the moment is still kind of the ground invasion of Rafah, isn't it? And whether or not that's going to happen.
Well, that has begun tragically.
I missed that. There was
22 people killed overnight in Rafah, and that is something that the US warned against it. It asked Israel not to take it any further in Rafah, but that incursion has begun. The kind of positive story from this week, or at least the sort of the progress that's been made, is that there is a proposal on the table now, not for a permanent ceasefire, but something that's being called a restorative peace. The details are not totally public. We don't know how long that would last, but it's been proposed by Israel, and Hamas say right now that they have no major concerns with it, which, you know, I think the suggestion being that they're prepared to consider it at length. So the Hamas political arm, they are on their way to, I think, either Egypt or Qatar. These talks are all kind of happening in either Egypt or Qatar. And Egypt, because Rafah is right on the border with Egypt, you know, there is quite a lot of international pressure now, I think, on countries to bring their sort of weight to bear. Because if the conflict is to spill over into Egypt, you know, Egypt is a huge country, a relatively powerful country, very important, you know, in terms of trade relations around the world, but also just a power who, you know, we don't like, if Israel ends up going to war with Egypt, that's a huge problem. Of course, we're already in a huge problem, but this does seem like a moment at which there could be at least a temporary sort of, you know, restorative peace, as they call it, which would maybe allow people to rebuild. You know, Hamas released a video this week, you may have seen, with two Israeli hostages in it, just again appealing for peace. I think there's something like about 100 living Israeli hostages thought to still be in Palestine. And I think the kind of offer Hamas is making was, you know, that these people can be released if the right conditions are met. So maybe these conditions are about to be met. Maybe there could be this restorative peace in the coming days. But, you know, as it stands, the troops are in Rafah and people are dying already. So that's sort of the lay of the land.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that update. Obviously, we'll continue to talk about it. Now, let's move into so much crazy shit has been happening over the last week around immigration in Ireland. And we are in this big situation with the UK now. Give us the lowdown. What's been going on?
Yeah, so the kind of spat we found ourselves in with the UK, it all starts with something people will probably be familiar with, which is the UK's Rwanda bill, which is their plan for if they, you know, perceive people to have arrived illegally, essentially the plan is to put them on planes to Rwanda. And there's no nicer way to say it. And that's the way that they've, from the beginning, it's been part of Rishi Sunak's plan as prime minister. It's kind of something that he really saw as like a flagship policy.
Mm.
And I think it's the kind of thing that, you know, when a lot of us saw it in Ireland, we were like, what? Like, you know, you almost didn't even know it was possible.
Yeah.
You know, this idea of someone comes to your shores seeking asylum and you somehow have permission to put them on a plane, you know, not even to their home country, but to Rwanda. And I think, you know, the argument that Sunak makes is that Rwanda is a safe country. Rwanda is, you know, it's not as if it's entirely dangerous, but it's, you know, it's not a...
It's not Switzerland.
Yeah, it's not entirely safe either.
Yeah.
And I think that point has been made many a time. But where it comes into, where Ireland have now come into it, is Micheál Martin sort of raised the idea that Sunak's plan would result in more asylum seekers and migrants coming to Ireland. Because obviously Sunak has been very explicit that the Rwanda plan, it's not about efficiency or anything. It's about a deterrent.
Mm.
He's trying to punish these people. And if you kind of punish people or deter people from going to the UK, then of course we're kind of the next door neighbor. Micheál Martin, I don't know if it was jumping the gun, because the flights haven't even started taking off yet. You know, nobody has actually been deported to Rwanda yet.
Mm.
So for Micheál Martin to say that this will necessarily increase asylum into Ireland, I that could be premature.
Mm.
That's more of an assumption than something that's actually happening right now. It kind of came at the same time as Helen McEntee noted that 80% of migration into Ireland, or illegal migration into Ireland, quote unquote, legal or illegal immigration, that comes through the northern border.
Mm.
So, you know, clearly that is where the access comes in. But I can't necessarily see. Well, no, I'm not going to say that, but it's possible that if 80% of our migrants already come in through that border, I'm not sure that'll change all that much with this Rwanda policy. So it is kind of just a lot of strange back and forth. There was supposed to be a meeting today between Helen McEntee and James Cleverly, who is kind of her counterpart. I think he's the Home Secretary in the United Kingdom. But that was called off at the 11th hour, kind of the last minute, just due to a diary conflict, according to James Cleverly.
Mm.
But then, again, that's, you know, quite a strange thing to happen. And it suggests that there is some tension between Sunak and Micheál Martin and the various parties involved.
Yeah, I saw that Rishi Sunak was interviewed on Sky News' Sunday Morning with Trevor Phillips, and he was asked about this. And he said, "My focus is on the United Kingdom and securing our borders." But he said that Micheál Martin's comment illustrated a couple of things. He said, one, that illegal migration is a global challenge, which is why you're seeing multiple countries talk about doing third country partnerships, looking at novel ways to solve this problem. And I believe we'll follow where the UK has led. But what it also shows, I think, is that the deterrent is, according to your comment, already having an impact, because people are worried about coming here. And that demonstrates exactly what I'm saying. If people come to our country illegally, but know that they won't be able to stay, they're much less likely to come. And that's why the Rwanda scheme is so important. Like, the problem is, I mean, there's a million problems, but like one of the problems is the assessment of whether someone is rightfully seeking asylum or whether they're not. Those programs are not perfect, to say the least. So like, you know, speaking about people as if they're, you know, criminals, if they are later deemed that their asylum claim is not, you know, doesn't pass the muster or whatever, is unfair in the first place, because even people who want to migrate for economic whole conversation, and so upsetting to think about people being spoken about in this way, especially in a country like Ireland, where we have done nothing but send people off to work in other countries for centuries.
That's it. It reduces people to almost like livestock, this idea that we can ship them from here to there. And as you say, in some cases, without truly giving them a fair hearing. Because, I mean, we've all seen examples over the last several years of sort of asylum applications that, first of all, take years to process and are then rejected for some, you know, reason that doesn't seem to pass muster at all.
Mm.
So, I mean, for us to become even more intense about locking people out and putting them on planes to Rwanda is, you know, a strange development. And it has to be said that in his first week as Taoiseach, Simon Harris you know, he was asked about this and didn't rule it out for Ireland. Like, he said it was worth considering this idea of the third party country being used to process immigration. So it's not as if it's a conversation that we might not, like, it's, we can't rule this out happening in Ireland, or at least being suggested in Ireland in the years to come. So it's, and you know, that's the thing, Rishi Sunak, horrible as it sounds when he says that other countries might follow the UK's lead. Like, we see how aggressive France is with boats coming in. We see how aggressive Italy is with boats coming in. So I think Rishi Sunak, he could end up being correct that other countries do follow down this path. So this is something I suppose to be very aware of in the years to come.
Now, continuing a conversation about migration and immigration to Ireland, there were unfortunately some more events over the course of the last week via protests about migration. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so this, I suppose, the New Town Mount Kennedy, the suburb in Wicklow, is really where the worst of the action is taking place. And it really is very disturbing. You know, you see, it's a pretty large gathering. You know, it could be a couple of hundred people. I think there are different people within the group who would tell you that they're like, for example, some people get described as far right agitators. Some people get described as concerned citizens. Ultimately, the result is the same. What you're having is situations where fires are being lit at accommodation that's earmarked for asylum seekers. You know, you have these chants, you have the posters, you have the Ireland First and Ireland for the Irish. That is the tenor of these protests. These one became particularly intense. There was clashes with Gardaí. People were injured. People were arrested. Kind of, it's been rare. I think, as we know, we've seen lots of protests like this, but it's quite rare for the arrests to happen on the spot. Oftentimes there's been a policy of disengagement, which we've talked about a lot, but that has kind of, I think the straw has maybe broken the camel's back in Newtown and Kennedy, because the tenor of the protest was so intense. So, you know, I think, yeah, we've seen the footage of the fire, and we've seen there was, you know, pepper spray was deployed. People were pepper sprayed, which, you know, while regardless of kind of whatever the motivation is for people protesting, you know, the use of pepper spray in Ireland is quite rare. So for things to sort of devolve into that sort of chaos is definitely, it does seem to be a new escalation in terms of how these protests have been unfolding.
Yeah, it's interesting, I think, that, you know, people, you know, who are politically opposed to the people who take part in these kind of protests have been saying for quite some time, like, why are the Gardaí going so lightly on these people? Why do we have this policy of disengagement? But I'm just looking at a photograph from the protest, if we want to call it that. And the, one of the lead posters says, riot police against Irish men and women to impose foreign men on Newtown Mount Kennedy. Like, what? Like, that feels completely at odds with the reality of what's been happening, you know, because it is remarkable that the Gardaí did arrest people and use pepper spray and stuff over the weekend. Yet the narrative on the other side is that the Gardaí are, you know, have been kind of targeting them and against them and all the rest. But really, they've been allowed to do this for a long time.
That's it. Like, you know, you think about how long we went without any arrests in the case of arsons. You know, I think we had there, I think, you know, because I've written about this in the past, I think there were 18 arsons before there was a single arrest made. Arrests have begun to be made, you know, and investigations do take time. But, like, I think, let me tell you, if it had been 18 fires at 18 operating hotels that were making a profit and hosting Irish people as opposed to asylum seekers, I think we'd have had answers much, much sooner than that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would have kind of had them jump into action. But you're right. I think, you know, it is fairly typical of groups like these. You know, they have the victim mentality anyway. They believe they're the ones being pushed out. They believe that Ireland is out to get them. So, I mean, it's kind of no surprise that they would use this narrative to their advantage. You know, there is no denying, to be fair, that the Gardaí, in this case, they did go in, you know, full throttle. And that's never, you know, that's never ideal solution number one, you know. And I think the fact is that because that the policy has been of disengagement for so long, these groups who protest, as you say, quote unquote protest, you know, and they set fires and such, I think they've been so emboldened that now they've taken it to a level where they show up, they think they can really rule the roost. And it's got to the point where the Gardaí have to engage heavily. So I feel like it's the policy of disengagement that has maybe led us to this point where the engagement almost becomes shockingly heavy.
Yeah.
And
you know, Sorry, I was just thinking, I had a conversation with my dad yesterday. My dad loves TikTok, so do I. And my dad said to me yesterday, I think I'm going to stop using TikTok. And I said, why? And he said, because he keeps getting fed the live streams of these protests. Every time I use the word protest, it doesn't feel right to me. But anyway, that's what we're using for the purpose of the conversation. And I have also been constantly fed the live streams of these protests. I feel like every day I get given something that's happening somewhere. And my dad was like, I don't want to engage in that. And like, I don't understand why TikTok is giving that to me. I don't engage with content like that in any other kind of area. And you have to wonder this kind of thing, because I have been concerned about that as well, because if I'm, you know, it's not a big deal. I'm not going to be moved on this. Like, I'm not going to be convinced to be anti-migration. Like, that's just not a thing that's going to happen to me. But there are people for whom, you know, this kind of stuff, if you're constantly being fed it as you're trying to look at your makeup tutorials or whatever, like, it could potentially get in on your brain. Because the reality of the situation is a lot of people are taken in by this stuff because they are frustrated and they have genuine concerns and fears, as we've discussed on the podcast and as we will discuss now, because I had also included this story about some social housing in Finglas, which have been graffitied, to read with red writing on them all over the house, Irish only or the house burns. And apparently people in the area are really embarrassed that this has happened. Tommy Robinson, who is the former leader of the English Defence League, wrongin, to use an English term, has shared it on social media with the message, the locals of Finglas, Ireland, making their feelings known. Like, this is so upsetting to think that this kind of, you know, overtly xenophobic, if not racist, kind of graffiti would be up, you know, massively publicly. And also, but sorry, I'm not articulating myself very well. I believe I am still hungover from Friday night. But the problem is that housing is a real issue. And, you know, people from areas like Finglas are concerned about housing. People from every area in Ireland is concerned about housing. And so if you have people who are desperate, who can't get houses, you know, it's going to be very easy to convince them that the problem is, you know, people coming in from other countries and taking up space. You know, it's so upsetting, and we've said it over and over and over again, that instead of focusing their frustrations, their genuine frustrations and fears on the government, who are responsible for the situation that we're in with housing, instead they're being convinced to focus their frustrations on people who largely are coming, vulnerable people who are coming from other countries from desperate situations.
Absolutely. You know, because at the end of the day, these protests, I mean, we've seen a few protests outside Leinster House, but they seem much more happy to protest outside, you know, unprotected, vulnerable, accommodation earmarked for asylum seekers. You know, we've seen video after video of, you know, women and children being screamed at by, you know, kind of ravenous groups of people. But as you say, you know, and of course, you know, there was the protest outside Roderick O'Gorman's home, which, you know, we don't condone either. But the fact is that mostly the people coming in for the sort of this, you know, these arson attacks, this really dangerous stuff, are just vulnerable people who are just looking for, you know, protection. And we have roughly 100,000 derelict properties in Ireland. If the government, and, you know, we have had budget surpluses, we have this rainy day fund now. So surely this is the emergency, you know, and just to be clear, this was the emergency before there was this wave of migration.
100%. This has been the emergency.
We had a housing crisis 3 years ago and 4 years ago and 5 years ago. So the idea that this has just arisen is a fantasy.
Exactly. And I wrote a column literally saying that when they did a big like announcement about their, you know, our economic success and millions being put into the rainy day fund, I was like, I'm sorry, that's like, what are you talking about? Like, we are drowning. We are drowning in terms of housing, and you're putting money into a rainy day fund? Like, it is beyond me. Like, I truly can't understand it. How they could possibly, I will never understand it. Never. And I just think it's important to acknowledge that, like, there are people who are scumbags and racist and xenophobic, and they might be protesting outside Leinster House, but they're protesting about immigration. They're not protesting about housing, which is actually the real issue. And those people, unfortunately, will manipulate and, you know, bring people in who are not scumbags, who are not horrible, rotten, racist people, you know, who are decent people who are struggling. And that's what upsets me, because, you know, it's not right and it's not fair. And I had conversations after the Dublin riots. I had conversations with some, I was on a press trip with some younger members of Ireland, and we had a conversation about the riots, and they were upset because one of the politicians we'd spoken to that day had been really, I don't know, he kind of spoken about the protests in a very kind of dismissive way about the people who were protesting. And they were upset because they were like, we know people who were doing that. And, you know, people are really upset and they are annoyed because they can't get this and they can't get that. And there's no resources and there's no housing and there's blah, blah, blah. And they were, you know, they felt like he was being too dismissive of their concerns. And I can understand that. Like, I can understand those frustrations. And I just think they're being manipulated and misled in many cases, and the government doesn't seem to want to do anything about it. It's easier to just like write them off as idiots or whatever than to actually deal with the fact that you have created this situation by not supporting people who need to be supported. You know, we can support immigrants who need support, and we can also support the people who are Irish, and then we wouldn't have this issue.
Yeah, and it's because it lets the government off the hook. Mm. You know, it's not in, and this is why I think, you know, for so long the policy has been one of disengagement and this light touch, is because, you know, for as long as, and this is, you know, this is kind of politics 101 from time immemorial, you know, governments love a scapegoat. And if they think that the people to blame are, you know, 70,000 Russian refugees or whatever, you know, all the better, because it means that they're not getting the blame for housing.
Mm.
And you know, as we've said, the housing crisis has been real since maybe 2014, you know, like could be 10 years now. And so like, and what we're about to speak about next, we're about to be speaking about, you know, a lack of hospital beds. You know, that's something that has existed since I was a child and before. Mm. So like the idea that, you know, quote unquote, Ireland is full because we've got some extra people is a load of bollocks, because we've never had the resources.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's either, for me, it's either invest or give up on the whole feckin' thing.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
So I saw that Leo Varadkar was on the Late Late Show on Friday night and spoke about various things, about obviously him stepping down as Taoiseach and stuff, but I found it quite galling hear him say that improvements in housing could have happened 5 years ago if the government had been braver. Like, what?
Oh, yeah, I just don't know what to say to that. You know, that's one of the things he said was that hindsight is 2020. Like, hindsight, you know, people have been begging, you know,
screaming,
people have been screaming, marching. There's been huge, like, you know, there was the Ireland for All march in February 2023. And like, that was, you know, attended by thousands. I think it was like well over 10,000 people. You know, people have been crying out for housing just forever. And the idea that, you know, things could have been different had they just been braver, I really don't honestly know what he means by that. Like, does he mean to say that the resources were in fact always there and they just didn't use them? Like, I think he needs to kind of, I think there's almost an incumbency on him. He's still a TD. Mm. He should have to come out and explain those remarks further, because I think we're owed an explanation as to what he means by braver and why more investment wasn't put into housing over 5 years if the option was there.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It just feels very kind of flippant or something for someone who is still, you know, in politics, or someone who is still sitting DD, to kind of be like, oh, and, you know, sorry, he said, sorry, we haven't been able to do more for you in the past 13 years. Like, that as well. You're just like, what?
Like, yeah, I really don't know. Like, is it
would have been better to say nothing? Like,
yeah, like, is it like an apology tour? Is it like a PR rehabilitation thing?
It's definitely a PR thing, because he's obviously, yeah, he has to move on to something. And look, I'm not the world's most anti-Varadkar person. Like, you know, because I'm a little pathetic loser who just finds empathy for literally everyone in every situation. But like, he's definitely moving on to some other job. You know, we don't know what it's going to be, but it's probably going to be still in politics. But like, you know, so he has to recuperate. He'll his certainly, PR.
He's going to continue to be a very important man, regardless, yeah, of what he does next.
Yeah. And it's going to be easy for him if people don't hate him. But like, yeah, I don't know if this is the way to do it.
No, I think people will just be mystified by these comments. Like, I would love to hear a more in-depth explanation of what he means, because, you know, housing has just been at crisis levels for so long.
Yeah, and its impact, its tentacles go into every other area of Irish life, you know, health, mental health. Like, you know, emigration, the that we have so many young people who have just left this country, who continue to leave this country. I just met a friend last night who said, I've just had it. Like, I've had it. I'm leaving. And I don't blame him, because, you know, as you say, some of this stuff has been going on for decades now. Anyway, look, I feel like I've been on my high horse for a long time there.
One of the things he said as well was, despite like our healthcare system's many problems, that people are living longer, which I thought was kind of funny, because people have just been living longer, you know, at a permanently upward trajectory for the last like 200 years.
Yeah, I don't really think you can take credit for that.
Yeah, that's not us. That's a more general kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, speaking of the health system, our next story is about eating disorder treatments in Ireland, which again is something that I have been covering for years now. And nothing ever improves, it feels like. There was a prime time about this subject last week, which I think brought it back into the forefront of people's minds. But tell us about the absolute deficiency in the treatment of people with eating disorders in Ireland.
Yeah, and this was covered by a reporter for the Journal this week, Paul O'Donoghue. I know he's also done just tremendous work on eating disorder news for like the last 4 or 5 years. He's just been like a pit bull on it. And it like some of the revelations kind of stunned me. Ireland currently only has 3 adult eating disorder beds. You know, like that just seems
impossible. And that's been the way for years, because this number comes up every couple of years and everybody goes, oh my God, that's appalling. And the government says some bullshit. And then a couple of years later, we hear again that Ireland still has only 3 adult eating disorder beds.
And we've seen now spikes in eating disorder hospital admissions as well. So it's we're having more people who need to be treated, and we're staying completely static in terms of the specialist beds we have. Mm-hmm. So anyone who is not lucky enough to get into one of these 3 beds is being treated, but, you know, in a non-specialist situation. Between the years of 2018 and 2023, there were supposed to be 20 more beds opened for specialist care. Even to me, I don't know what sort of the European average is. Even to me, that would sound low. You know, 23 doesn't sound like very many when you consider that. I mean, you know, not to speak for anyone, but like, I've known a dozen people with eating disorders, if not more.
Yeah.
I think that would be fairly typical for everyone. You know, eating disorders are so prevalent and so vicious. And the idea that we have invested so little is really crazy.
There's and the thing is, oh, sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, just there was another statement that I saw from, you know, the Minister of State for Mental Health, Mary Butler, who said that going forward, because we're, you know, we're not just lacking beds, we're also lacking kind of treatment hubs. She was saying that 1.15 million had been ring fenced for further funding. You know, in the context of a health budget, in the context of the overall budget, 1.15 million is nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of almost tells you, I think, how seriously we are not taking this problem.
Yeah. And, you know, Holly Cairns spoke about it in Leaders' Questions in the Dáil last week. And she said, it seems like the government doesn't understand how serious eating disorders are. She said, over the years, I've spoken to women who've been forced to speak publicly about what they've gone through to set up GoFundMes to get the care that they needed. I've spoken to parents who were at their wits' end watching their children quite literally waste away in disbelief that there's no support for them. This reality does not seem at all represented in the government's response. And I have to agree, like, I've seen, as you say, we all know people, but I have a friend who has had to advocate so hard for herself to get any kind of appropriate treatment, work so hard via her insurance company. And this is trying to get into, you know, not publicly funded treatment, because, you know, that's the only option for most people is to try and take it a different direction. But like, you're talking, yeah, and you're talking about people who are, you know, not healthy mentally, and, you know, but, and yet all of the responsibility falls on them to try and push things through and make things happen for themselves. Not everybody is able to do that. Even if you can get through the logistics, or you can find the money, or you can convince your insurance company to pay for it, which in itself seems to be a challenge. Like, and it just feels like they don't care. And I have gotten letters over the years from people just begging me for help. And I mean, who am I? But begging me to help them get the word out for a friend, or see if I can get advice for a friend, because they have friends who they are watching dying, wasting away, as Holly Cairns said. And there seems to be nothing. And so much of the system is completely banjaxed when it comes to assessment as well, because, you know, there are still people who are told that they can't seek treatment for anorexia because they're not light enough. Their weight is too small. When anorexia is a mental illness, it's not about your weight. Like, you can be anorexic and be in a very big body. It's beyond belief. I actually can't believe that we're having this conversation, because I have had this conversation. I've had this conversation in the life of this podcast. I've had this conversation on 2FM. I've written about this for the Indo. Like, this is not new. They just don't care. It's the only explanation, I think.
Yeah. I remember I interviewed a girl 6 years ago who kind of explained that same thing to me, you know, and it stunned me, the idea that, you know, you weigh too much to be treated for anorexia, essentially incentivizing you to lose more weight, incentivizing you to get sicker. And that broke my heart then. And I know that there are just still so many people going through the very same thing right now. Mm. And like, as we noted, there has been a spike in admissions. So like, this is something that Ireland is really suffering with. There's another part of the noteworthy investigation that the journal did, that there are only 3 and a bit operational treatment hubs. We're supposed to have 9 treatment hubs up and running. Mm. 3 of them are up and running, and one of them is like taking admissions, like doing assessments. They're not ready to treat yet, but the other 5 are not operational. They're not properly staffed. Mm. You know, I think that this 1.1 million, that's where the budget to staff them is coming from. Mm. That's not enough money to staff 5 treatment hubs. So, you know, as you say, what else can you conclude besides it's not being taken seriously enough?
And also, just to note that, like, you know, anorexia is not the only eating disorder. There are other eating disorders, and treatment is quite limited. If you fall outside the standard, it's completely unacceptable, and yet we're forced to accept it. It's just absolutely infuriating. Okay, let's move on, because this week there was the DPP made a decision on prosecution regarding the Gardaí who were involved in the fatal shooting of George Enchenko.
This is the kind of thing where it's sort of different to the US. We don't have too many details on this. The DPP, Director of Public Prosecutions, they don't really need to explain their decisions to the public, really. Mm. But GSOC, which is the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission, they're the ones in charge of sort of investigating the Gardaí. They confirmed to the journal that the DPP notified them of the decision. And I'll read the direct quote here. Not to direct a prosecution in the case of the tragic death of Mr. George Nkencho, who was shot and killed by a member of Angarda Síochána Armed Support Unit outside his family home in West Dublin on 30th of December 2020. So I think most people will remember this awful story. It was tragic. It was a young man, 27 years old, kind of in the midst of, I think, what was believed to be a mental health episode. There was social media footage at the time. Many people will have seen it. Many people will have drawn their own conclusions as to the appropriateness of force that was used. The Nkencho family have stated their intention. They are going to appeal this decision. They still believe that, you know, that the very much excessive force was used. Mr. Nkencho, he had been tased already. It was believed that he was armed with a kitchen knife. But yeah, ultimately he was fatally shot several times. And the decision that's been come to is that there is no prosecution for, and it's taken, you know, what, 3.5 years for this decision to be reached. I think that's a huge source of frustration, not only for the family, but I think for anyone who wanted a, you know, there should have been a speedier resolution to this, particularly if the decision was going to be not to prosecute. I'm not sure how it can take 3.5 years to come to a conclusion. Not you know, that just seems incredibly inefficient to me.
Yeah.
But the family now, they can request and receive a report with full detail, so that the family and their lawyers will have access to the reasons as to why why there's no prosecution. So they'll have access to that as they kind of make their appeal. So this story isn't over. There will be the appeal, which is, as of now, that's kind of what the family has waited 3.5 years to hear, and that as of now there is no prosecution for the death.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll follow that and see what happens in terms of appeal. I wanted to touch on this Harvey Weinstein story as well, because a lot of people will have heard that there was a court ruling about Harvey Weinstein where his 2020 rape conviction was overturned. And, you know, that's not great, but it's not the only thing he's ever been accused of.
No, and he is still very much in jail for another rape conviction. You know, because when I first saw it, I saw the headline, and I saw a few of his convictions were overturned, and I was like, oh dear, does that mean this man is getting out? You know, he's still imprisoned because of a separate rape charge in Los Angeles, which, you know, he's appealing that too, as far as I know. So powerful men are powerful men, and these things happen. But so what happened in New York this week was that a 23-year sentence was overturned. New York Court of Appeals found in his favor in a 4-3 decision. So a tight decision, but still enough for him to, for this, you know, this was one of the kind of 23 years was a strong, for a man who was 72 years old, that was kind of seen as a strong sentence. It was seen as a tough sentence. I think it was seen, obviously, as an enormous victory for the Me Too movement that was really sparked into, you know, sparked into life by the accusations against him. You know, in particular, Ashley Judd, I think, was quoted, and she was saying that, you know, this was a huge blow for the Me Too movement. Tarana Burke, who is the woman who she kind of launched the hashtag Me Too movement. She has also said that this is something that people need to rally around and realize that sort of the effects of the Me Too movement are not necessarily a permanent thing. It's not as if, you know, we've had the Me Too movement and now all abusers go to jail and we can kind of rest on our laurels. There's other celebrities. Cara Delevingne spoke out about it. You know, but it's disturbing. You know, Weinstein's lawyer, Arthur Idala was his name. He called the ruling a great day for America. Which, you know, you read that and you're just kind of, you know, what on earth? But so, as I said, yeah, he's still serving a 16-year sentence in, I mean, I think he's in New York, but
I think he's in a hospital, actually. I just saw that he's been hospitalized.
Really?
Via prison, obviously. But the reason that it was overturned, I think, is important as well, because often convictions are overturned not because someone is believed to be innocent, but because of some sort of legal question, like whether or not the process was appropriate. And in this case, what was found was that the trial judge should not have permitted three other women to testify that Weinstein had assaulted them as well, because their allegations were not part of the criminal charges against him. And so the majority of the court found that the testimony by the three women ran afoul of the rule and made the trial unfair. So, like, it's not even necessarily, we don't think he did do it. Yeah. So this is just, you know, the system, unfortunately.
And that is quite a common thing, unfortunately. Like, and ultimately, yeah, maybe that judge kind of did make a mistake, because you are ultimately, you're not supposed to hear anything that could prejudice, the jury's not supposed to hear anything that could prejudice against them that's not directly related to the trial. For example, in the case of O.J. Simpson, and, you know, when he was on trial for killing Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman, like, he had been a domestic abuser for years. And, you know, the jury wasn't allowed to hear that kind of evidence because it wasn't a domestic violence case. It was a murder case. So it'd be a similar principle here. But it is, you know, it's the kind of the explanation that will just probably shock a lot of people, because ultimately, other stories about Harvey Weinstein are kind of essential to hear in order to fully understand the scope of what it was he was accused of. But, you know, as we say, he is still in prison for another rape charge. So
it's, you know, not over. Okay, before I let you go, I just wanted to very briefly talk about what's happened this week with TikTok, because I think people have probably heard that something's going on, but maybe don't know what exactly. There's been this conversation about TikTok getting banned in America has been going on for quite some time, but I gather this week it took a step forward.
Yeah, so the decision they took to ban TikTok, I think that was a couple of weeks ago. But of course, it's a conditional ban. So it's the condition of the ban is they want ByteDance, which is the Chinese company that owns TikTok. They want ByteDance to sell up. Which is it's kind of an unprecedented trade war move. I think people were, I don't know if people were shocked about it because, as you say, it had been signposted for so long, but it's a very, very strange move for a country to say, you know, we're going to ban this tech unless you divest from it. Because ByteDance, it's not quite a, you know, a direct arm of the Chinese government, but in China, you know, there's fairly close state control over these huge private giants. So what's happened this week is I think there must have been chat that ByteDance were considering selling up, because ByteDance has come out and said that foreign media reports about ByteDance exploring the sale of TikTok are untrue. ByteDance does not have any plans to sell TikTok. That's just the kind of thing we can't know if that's true or not. Usually there's kind of no smoke without fire in these situations. And it could be in ByteDance's interest. Like, I mean, I don't know. I couldn't even tell you who they could possibly sell it to. TikTok would be such a valuable property that I really don't know who could almost buy it. And then sort of secondarily, whoever did buy it would probably run into some pretty serious anti-competition rules. Like if you were Twitter, you were Elon Musk, or if you're Apple, or if you're Alphabet and Google or Meta, if any of them were to buy TikTok, you know, that would, you know, they'd almost have a monopoly. That probably wouldn't work out. So I don't even know who could buy TikTok.
And I mean, the whole reason, the basis on this, the U.S. deciding that they want ByteDance to sell it is national security grounds, because they say that basically TikTok, and I remember there were rumors about this when TikTok first started getting big here, can be used by the Chinese government for espionage and propaganda. And I mean, look, TikTok is powerful, no doubt about it. I already mentioned earlier in this conversation that, like, you know, it's concerning when certain content is being fed to people. It was discussed on the podcast last week. So you can understand that to a certain extent. But also, don't take TikTok away. It's so entertaining.
It's a funny one because, you know, like, ultimately, every single app that we handed our data over to can be used for espionage, you know, like really anything. TikTok, I don't think, differs in that respect from Twitter or from Instagram. The only difference is that it's not in the control of the sort of US industry state establishment. It's in the control of the Chinese industry. And you know what I've always thought? I've always thought that I'm happier for China to spy on me than the US, because it's, you know, It's further away. Like, I feel like China would want less with me, you know?
Well, I'm always like, just like, what do I have that could possibly be of interest to anyone? Like, what am I doing on TikTok that is going to be used, could possibly be used against me? Like, what are you going to figure out that, like, I watch a lot of Renee Rapp edits and, like, I'm really into skincare? Like, congrats, off you go.
When people blackmailing you with the Renee Rapp edits.
I know. I'd be like, look, guys, what can I say? She's funny and smart.
This may shock you, it may not, I don't use TikTok for such an online person. I just don't use it, and I
you're because better off, I know, because it's very addictive.
If I get into it, I'll simply never pull out of the tailspin.
I should give it up, because I actually genuinely am a bit concerned about how much of it I watch, so maybe a ban will be good for me. Actually, maybe that's the push I need. Well, look, Carl, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time this week and filling us in on all those stories. It was a lot to get through, so it's a lot of work. You can read Carl's writing on thejournal.ie. He has a weekly brilliant column called Cerealing in the Years, and then he also writes other bits, so just keep your eyes peeled. Also, just the Journal is just so great, guys, as a news resource. I used to work in the Daily Edge, which was part of the Journal. That's my kind of bias, but I genuinely think it's such an incredible news resource. And they launched a very, very cool thing this week, which I think is worth mentioning, which is all about getting to the bottom of what is the truth and making sure that what you're reading and what you are, I suppose, digesting in terms of media is accurate. And the Journal have really done a lot of work on that over the years in terms of their explainers and all the rest. But Fact Check is the new platform? Is that the right way to describe it? You describe it better than I would, I think, Carl.
Yeah, a new platform is probably a way to say it. It's called Knowledge Bank.
Fact Check is what they've been doing.
Yeah, I think what's really cool about it is that, you know, there are different ways to do journalism. And a lot of journalism is thought of as like, you know, the news cycle. You hear the news and you forget it 24 hours later because you've got new news.
Yeah.
Is kind of like sort of freezing these issues in a moment in time and like allow it's, you know, it's more of like an educational resource almost, where, you know, people can just, you know, get the facts about, you know, the most pressing issues affecting Ireland. So I think, you know, I didn't have any hand in developing Knowledge Bank, but I think it's a fantastic resource. And I, you know, I'll certainly be using it. And I think it's a really cool thing for the Journal to have done.
Yeah, I think so too. Congrats. Okay, well, Carl, where can the people find you on the internet?
They can find me on Twitter at TV's Carl Kinsella, and they can find me on Instagram at carl.kinsella.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Louise.
Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you feel more up to date on what's going on in the world and indeed in Ireland. Before I go, just a little reminder that any likes, reviews, shares, telling friends, all of that stuff is so gratefully received. And if you want to support the podcast with a few quid, patreon.com/catchupwithlouisemcsharry is the place to go. It is always appreciated when you guys choose to support in that way. Now though, thank you so much to Carl for being on the podcast today. Thank you to Acast for having me on the network. And I will talk to you on Wednesday. I hope you have a good couple of days in the meantime. If not, that's okay. They can't all be good. But I will talk to you then.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo. Built to last. Designed to impress.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.